I'm Buzz Knight, the host of the Taking a Walk podcast. I appreciate if you follow us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe to our newsletter so you can keep up to date with episodes at takingawalk.com. And if you have any suggestions about potential guests for Taking a Walk, whether it be you or someone else, you can also leave it at takingawalk.com. We love exploring music history on foot, and today our guest, albeit virtually, is Bob Mirko, a filmmaker, photographer, specializing in documentary films, and he's the creator of a wonderful documentary, Junk Blues and Collard Greens, the lovely story of the life and times of the late blues man, Willie Houston. Welcome, Bob Mirko, to Taking a Walk. Well, Bob, congrats on your documentary. Can you tell us how you first met the blues man, Willie Houston?
Oh, I guess 17 years ago, give or take, I read an article in a local weekly newspaper called Westward. I forgot the guy's name, but it was entitled The Junk Man Cometh. Willie Houston was a scrap / junk dealer, had a little scrap yard behind his house. Anyway, the article, you know, told all about him, but never really gave where he lived, except for a neighborhood. I was not a filmmaker, well, I don't know if I still am, but being a still photographer since I was 16. And I had dabbled in Super 8, 8mm, that kind of thing. Well, anyway, I said, you know, why not? I had a Super VHS camera. So I headed out and took about a week, went to a few places, asked about them. Nobody knew what I was talking about. But finally went to a scrap yard, and why I didn't go there in the beginning, I don't know, but, the junk man, Willie Houston, and they narrowed it down to a couple of blocks, and I went there. Well, I got through the junkyard dog he had and knocked on the door, introduced myself, and he was nice as can be, and I said, you know, I want to do a documentary. I'm not Hollywood, you know, it could either win an Oscar or going down, flush it down the toilet. So, yeah, you know, why not? Come on in. At the time, he was cooking collard greens. And I knew right off the bat what they were because I born in New York, but wound up in Miami, Florida. And so I knew exactly what they were. And that's how the title got started, you know, Junk Blues and Collard Greens. And we hit it right off, and that started it.
It's beautiful. So you were immediately encouraged to document his story, right? As soon as you met him, you asked for the order immediately, Bob, didn't you?
Yeah, on an impulse, and like I said, I had made a few little music videos before, and so I figured that the Super VHS wasn't going to cut it, and I went out and bought a, you know, state-of-the-art at the time, couple $1,000 mini digital DV, which is probably worth about $200 now if I could sell it, but you know how that goes. And we started filming, you know, within a week. But before that, before I even started filming, I said, you know, I need to take some pictures of him. And I was on my way somewhere one day, and I passed a little Mexican restaurant. And if you notice the Cadillac on the cover of the DVD, I think it's maybe a 60-something Cadillac, a boat. It just about fit through his gait. But I passed a Mexican restaurant, and that was sitting in the parking lot. So I went in. There was two people eating. Does anybody own that Cadillac out front? And immediately this guy, you didn't hit it, did you? And I said, no, I just want to talk to you, and told him what I was doing. He said, well, where do I show up? And so the next day he showed up with the Cadillac. He shined it and polished it, and he was so proud of that. And that's how we got the cover picture.
So you knew immediately that you had something. You bonded with him. You saw the story from reading it, obviously, in the paper. And then when you connected with Mr. Houston, you were like, I've got something here, right?
Yeah, I knew what it was, and figured it was, you know, more or less a local type level from the story. He had came to Denver and during the 59, I think, somewhere around there. And he was, you know, he had been in the Korean War, and he wound up in what we call Five Points, a neighborhood. And there was jazz clubs, and it was, he started out and he played, oh, just different gigs and stuff for not much money, and always relying on the scrap business to supplement his income between jobs. And I guess that went on for a lot of years. And then right off the beginning, when we started filming, he didn't have a band. He had a couple of guys that would come over his house and they would, you know, rehearse and jam. And it wasn't until Hubert Blues Lawhorn, who narrated the film, got with him, and they started the Blues Prowlers, and that's became his thing that he did for several years, because I followed him for almost 2 years, you know, at his house, and you see all that in the film. Went to his concerts and went to bars and that kind of thing, and put it all together on a little old Gateway computer. People said, are you crazy? How can you make an hour, whatever long documentary on that thing? I thought, that's all I got. So it was guerrilla filmmaking from the start.
Did you ever reach a point where you weren't sure if you could see it from start to finish at any point in time?
I had told him right off the bat that he didn't have to pay me. He didn't have to incur any expense. I would do everything, you know. And if it worked, it worked. If it didn't, well, you know, we had a good time. No, I didn't encounter any problems that I remember. I encountered some problems afterward, after I completed it and found out that, you know, I had model releases and all of that stuff that I knew about, and knew I had to cover his songs, you know, the copyrights and all of that. And while I was making it, his lawyer called me, and I almost wanted to stop it. And it wasn't through him. Willie was just as natural and comfortable as can be. But, you know, I hate to say lawyers, but he addressed the situation and said, you know, what if Steven Spielberg comes to town and wants to make a movie of him, you know, with the rights and all this? Then I said, come on. Steven Spielberg is not coming to town to film The Junk Man, okay? And so he went away. And then, you know, that was really all it was. They just kept going, and finally it came together.
So Mr. Houston passed away. When did he die?
I think about a little over two years ago he passed. And when I met him, he was like 79 or 80. And, you know, sharp as a tack and just down home, and, you know, where he came from, Grand Cane, Louisiana, you know, pick cotton. And he passed away, I think, 2 years ago.
So he got to see the final product, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He, I made him a deal back then, you know, and I gave him, and I didn't make many of them. I, you know, made maybe 70 or 80 of them. And I made those on the gateway one at a time. And what a pain in the, you know. and I really didn't know if I should continue it because, like I said, making them one at a time. And once in a while, somebody would say, you know, it plays on my laptop, but it doesn't play on my TV. It stops. And so I didn't really know the way around that. But didn't run into too much trouble. And so I said, well, here, you know, I gave him 15 or 20 of them. And then there was a lot of places after that I couldn't attend his gigs and stuff like that. They might have been out of town. And so he would take them, you know, and sell them and keep whatever he got. He had a CD, excuse me, out at the same time. And so he would sell them. But otherwise, I would take them to his concerts and bars and sold a few and gave him, you know, a couple of bucks for each one. And he was just happy as a jaybird.
It's a sweet story. It's so beautifully done. Junk Blues and Collard Greens. Bob, how can somebody get a hold of it other than you making these individual copies on your gateway?
I did a little advertising on Facebook and, you know, got some response there. But before all that, I had it made professionally, you know, from a DVD duplication place. And so I know they would play and all of that. And I did all the printing and stuff like that. And then within a month, if not less, I'm going to take an ad out, and they're working on it now in the Colorado Blues Society, which he was a member and the band was. And most of those guys, especially the old-timers of that, old-timers, but 17 years ago, they knew of him, played on some of his gigs. So that will, you know, be an opening there. But for the general public, I have it on the Super Merc 81 at Comcast.net on PayPal. And that's how you would, you know, order it.
It's beautifully done. Congratulations on a real
amazing story. If I did it again, I probably would have did 20 things different, you know, the deal. I'm sure you, I think you were in broadcasting and stuff like that, and you know how things like that goes. And, you know, well, I should have did this, I should have did that. But like I said, you know, it ain't Hollywood, Willie, so.
Well, the great Willie Houston, it's a great story. And thank you, Bob Mirko, for being on Taking a Walk and telling this story, which is certainly music history, unsung hero music history. Thank you,
Bob. Yeah, it was local, and you know, was he B.B. King? No, but he enjoyed the crap out of it, and he just looked forward. You can see the way he would dress for the gigs, and he was the elder statesman of the blues in Colorado.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, sir, for having me.
Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.